it's a historic time in American politics right now. But what we're here to talk about today is the implications of the elections for the future environment around the regulatory and legislative impacts on retirement plans. I'm joined today by my regular co-host, Mike Hadley from Davison Harmon. But in addition, we have Dan Murphy and Andy Lewin from the BGR Group. Dan Murphy is a Republican and corporate counsel, co-lead of the Financial Services Group. Andy Lewin, a Democrat and leader of the Financial Services practice at the BGR Group. Gentlemen, if we could just start with the impact of the Georgia Senate election, special elections, on the makeup of the Senate and what that might mean for the legislative environment for retirement plans. Michael, maybe I'd start with you.
It is a historic time. You know, probably the biggest implication for retirement savings and for retirement savings policymaking is that the election opens up some avenues for rulemaking that Democrats didn't have previously. With divided government, you're largely talking about things that are bipartisan. Even though the House and Senate are controlled by Democrats, it's a very thin majority. So there are a lot of things that still would need to be done by consensus. And retirement savings is a consensus issue. But there are things that open up to Democrats that weren't previously. One example is the Congressional Review Act, which allows Congress to overturn regulations passed near the end of a presidential term and was used by Republicans 4 years ago. Another option that's available is a process called budget reconciliation, which can allow for the passage of some tax provisions, some budget provisions, with a simple majority in the Senate, avoiding the filibuster. So for us, suddenly there are a lot of other pieces that we have to watch that we really wouldn't have had to watch if the Georgia elections had gone a different way.
Andy, I want to turn to you. The Georgia elections mean that the majority leader of the Senate will be Chuck Schumer. That has implications for committee chairs and ranking members. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the committees that affect retirement legislation in particular.
Sure. As you note, Chuck Schumer will become the Senate Majority Leader. Ron Wyden will now be chairing the Senate Finance Committee. Incoming Chairman Wyden is someone who's worked on retirement legislation for years, introduced RESA during the last Congress with then-Chairman Chuck Grassley. Patty Murray will become the chairwoman of the Senate Help Committee. And so, you know, the agenda of these committees, and particularly working with the incoming Biden administration, will change. As Mike Hadley noted, retirement legislation is traditionally bipartisan, and I expect that that will continue. You know, there are some issues within that bucket that we can get to in a bit that are a little more partisan. But at the end of 2019, we saw some good bipartisan legislation in the form of the Secure Act pass. Now that we have Secure Act 2.0, that'll need to be reintroduced, but that'll build on the Secure Act. It's very bipartisan. So, you know, I think that the process will allow for consideration and passage of some bipartisan retirement legislation. And then there will be a bigger issue over larger changes to the tax code that we can talk about in a bit.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, having Patty Murray at the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee will, I think, be a positive impact for future legislation in the retirement space, given that that's one of her areas of interest. Dan, turning to you for a second, maybe you could give us a little color on what's likely to happen with the ranking members in the Senate, particularly on these two committees.
Sure. Hitting rewind just for a second, based on some of Michael's comments and also Andy's. You know, at some point, we're going to move beyond the vitriol of what's going on in Washington, and we're going to get back to a phrase that we use here called regular order, which means every day, whether it's Speaker Pelosi or Majority Leader Schumer, or for that matter, Chairman Wyden or others, in the House, they have to have 218 votes to pass anything. In the Senate, they're going to have 51. So going back to Michael's initial comments is, everything that gets done in Washington, I believe in 2021 and arguably in 2022, will have to be done on a bipartisan basis. And I know that a lot of people in America see that as a great thing to return to bipartisanship. And I would argue that issues such as retirement funding, retirement legislation are ripe to be moved up the list, if you will, as we try to find things that we can work on together. Going back to your question of, for example, the Senate Finance Committee, now led by incoming Chairman Wyden, ranking member Crapo from Idaho. My sense of Mr. Crapo, having observed him for many years, he's not a particularly controversial senator. He's a senator that wants to get things done, work with his friends across the aisle. So I actually have hope that things can get done in the Senate Finance Committee and move retirement legislation along. We'll see. And then I would just also add, with the Biden administration, I've just been watching some of the appointments coming forward, and the appointment of nominee Boston Mayor Walsh tells me that at least at the top of the Department of Labor, where many of your issues are controlled in the agency level, there'll be a union-heavy focus on the agenda, more so than on the retirement agenda. So I think the action initially will be on the Hill.
I wanted to return to the question about the Congressional Review Act. The Trump DOL had issued a number of regulations that would be subject to all of the sort of complexities of the Congressional Review Act. Michael, I'll start with you. The question in particular that I think a lot of people wonder about is the recently issued ESG rule, which was subsequently renamed to financial factors, and the proxy voting rule. Do we think that that Congress will revisit specifically those two under CRA? And then if not, why not?
Yeah, great question. 4 years ago, I think 15 or 16 regulations that Obama put in place in his last year were overturned by a Republican-controlled Congress. And we certainly expect that the opportunities there to overturn some regulations. Of course, it's a big government. In order for a regulation to be up for challenge, it has to have been sent over to the House and Senate, basically published, within basically the last 6 months of 2020. And the two that you mentioned, the regulation affecting financial factors in investing called ESG and the proxy voting, are within that window. At this point, we are not hearing that House and Senate leaders are interested in moving that one through a CRA challenge. That takes up time. They have other things they're going to work on, although that certainly could change. One reason why they may not want to do that is because when you overturn a regulation via the Congressional Review Act, the regulator is not allowed to put in place a substantially similar regulation, and we don't know exactly what that means, but it could be viewed as constraining the ability of the Biden Department of Labor to regulate where they wish to. And going back to a point Dan made, one thing we know about Marty Walsh, who's the nominee for Secretary of Labor, is he is interested in climate change, and ESG could be one place where they kind of want to have their own rule that would require notice and comment, etc. I will say we should be modest about predicting what will and won't be overturned. I admit surprise at what was overturned during the Trump era, a lot more than I'd thought, including two retirement regs. And we definitely know there are Hill staffers right now putting together a list of every single regulation that's within the window, and they're going to sort of look through them and say, what do we want to do? At this point, we're not expecting it, but if you hear this podcast in 3 months and those have been overturned, I reserve the right to say, I told you, we're just going to have to wait and see.
Thanks. I think the other big question that many of us in the retirement industry have right now is, following on the heels of SECURE, Chairman Neal had already proposed what is, I think, colloquially referred to as SECURE 2.0. There's a lot of overlap between Neal and Brady's SECURE 2.0 and the bills in the Senate, Portman Cardin in particular, which would be pretty significant. In addition, Chairman Neal has published another proposed piece of legislation that goes even further than SECURE 2.0 did, particularly around the topic of mandatory auto enrollment in plans. Andy, I'd start with you on your view about the appetite of Congress to take on either, will they stick with the more modest goals in SECURE 2.0 and Portman Cardin, or given that the Democrats control both houses, even at a narrow margin, do they aim for more sweeping changes on the legislative side?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, I don't think it necessarily has to be either or. I think that they can go for both. Let's start with Secure 2.0 first. I think that there is probably enough bipartisan support there. I mean, look, when the House originally passed its version of the original Secure Act 1.0, it passed with 417 votes. And I'm not predicting that Secure 2.0 will pass by such a wide margin, but I do think that there is enough appetite there on a bipartisan basis to get something like Secure 2.0 passed, which really in a lot of ways builds on the success of Secure 1.0. But even with that, you know, I would note that the process will matter a lot. The Secure Act was attached to a much bigger government funding bill at the end of 2019. So even bills in Congress with a lot of bipartisan support often take a while to get through the process because oftentimes they need to be attached to a larger vehicle that has to move. So on the second part of that, on bigger changes, maybe I'm looking at Chairman Neal priority that he's had for a long time, something like auto IRAs, which was also, I think, a component of the Biden campaign's recommendations in the retirement space. On something bigger like that, and some of what I think you were referencing, Drew, in the health and economic equity framework plan that Chairman Neal put out, some of those changes are going to be a little bit more controversial. In some cases, they'll be a little bit costlier, and I think particularly for those that touch the tax code, some of those are going to be possibly considered in the context of budget reconciliation, which is a way to get particularly revenue and mandatory spending legislation through the Senate, in particular on a simple majority vote, something that's not subject to the filibuster. And that's really where we see major tax changes happen, like the 2017 tax law.
Yeah, Dan, any color you want to add there? And I would highlight the really controversial topic that a lot of us in the industry are paying very close attention to. The Biden campaign had a plank in his platform of changing the tax treatment of contributions into 401k plans from a deduction to a credit. That's likely to be controversial. Do the Georgia elections and the Senate sweep make it more likely that we push for that sort of fundamental change to 401k plans, or does the narrowness of the margin mean that that one doesn't make it onto the final legislative platform?
The Georgia elections changed everything because now the agenda is set by the Democrats rather than the Republicans. And I don't mean to be so simplistic, but that was sort of a political and policy earthquake. Now, going back to my earlier comment, again, everything needs 51 votes. Everything needs floor time. And every day, Chuck Schumer and his chairman and chairwomen have to wake up in the morning and figure out how do they get to 51 and how did they move legislation through a Senate where any one individual senator is powerful. Controversial issues also have constituencies on both sides. So I don't mean to reduce everything to politics, but again, I go back to the most controversial issues, whether on the far left or on the far right, will have a very difficult time making it through the committee process onto the floor and to a final vote. So I would argue that compromise is probably the word of 2021. And I would also say being involved, whether it's Franklin Templeton's or others who are listening to this podcast, you have to make yourself known. You have to make your issues known. You have to explain what it means to your clients, your employees, et cetera, because these will all be close calls legislatively.
Thanks. Michael, you want to add any additional color on the switch from the deduction to the credit?
You know, the campaign promises are vague for a reason, right? And what Biden said was, I'm going to equalize the benefits among low and middle income. And that could mean a lot of things. There are some ideas in Secure 2.0 that could kind of do that, that could fulfill the campaign promise and could also be acceptable to all the votes that you need. And I couldn't agree more with Dan and Andy of the need for doing this on a bipartisan basis. I'll give you an example. One thing that seems to be bipartisan is increasing the savers credit. so that more people are eligible to get that sort of, call it a matching contribution, if you will, from the government when you save. Another idea, increase business credits. Increase credits for folks to have automatic enrollment. And there are lots of ideas like that that could kind of fulfill that promise. But I agree. I think the idea of completely fundamentally upending how we save for retirement, that's just not likely. There's too many people, even on the Democratic side, who wouldn't go for that. And I'd make the point that Secure 2.0, every other piece of major legislation is based on the idea that our system fundamentally works, that we need to build on it. We need to squeeze the costs out. We need to get rid of administrative burdens. We need to make it easier for employers to have a plan and to save for a plan. But not to completely change the way in which the tax code supports saving for retirement.
So before we close out here, I would ask one other high-level question. Any comments about other potential nominees for some of the key Biden administration roles that may impact retirement plans, in particular thinking of Mr. Gensler potentially as the head of the SEC, or any other key personnel that would impact the retirement plan? So Dan, maybe start with you on the potential for Gensler as the head of the SEC.
Look, again, going back to the Georgia election and the consequences, and obviously the November election of Joe Biden. Joe Biden had a platform. He had a list of nominees. And depending on what happened in Georgia, the names on that list of nominees either became more conservative or more liberal. And they won those two seats, and that allowed him to appoint Mr. Gensler, obviously a very accomplished gentleman, but I would say definitely left of center on his views that he will espouse both at the SEC and on retirement-related issues. If the Republicans had won Georgia, I would argue that would be very difficult for someone like Gary Gensler, who carries the views that he has, to be confirmed in the United States Senate or appointed by Joe Biden. So elections matter. We are where we are. And Mr. Gensler is going to, you know, lead the SEC. I would argue that there may be a bit of a counterbalance in the likely Secretary of the Treasury, in Janet Yellen. And also, you know, don't forget the role of Marty Walsh. So when the president assembles an economic team, they will all have a seat at the table and they will all be able to make the case. And hopefully what comes out the other end is a balanced approach to retirement savings, and the business that Franklin Templeton's involved in.
Andy, you want to add anything to that?
I would agree with everything Dan said. And I think once you get down from the department head level, cabinet secretaries and the chairman of the SEC, once you get down to filling out, you know, deputy secretary, assistant secretary, deputy assistant secretary positions all the way through and start filling out as well over at the SEC, some of the senior staff level positions, it's going to take a little time. And that's typical really for any administration. And I think that will play out over Q1 and maybe even into early Q2.
So I'm going to give you the last word, Mr. Hadley. Anything else you'd like our listeners to be paying attention to as we go into the early stages of the Biden administration?
You know, much of what plan sponsors and those that advise them that they deal with, many of the things where somebody comes in and says, hey, you have to adjust your plan in some way. Much of that is done, written by people that have been in the government for a long time, bureaucrats, and I don't mean that in a derogatory manner at all. Most of the folks at the IRS, at the Department of Labor, that actually have the pen to write some of these things are career folks. And there's a lot that still needs to be done that probably would not have been affected by the election. A perfect example is all the things we still need to do to implement the SECURE Act. And so as a plan sponsor, you're probably asking questions about, you know, what are the implications of the SECURE Act in here or there, or what do I need to do to adjust to the CARES Act or COVID-19? There's a lot going on. It is true, as Andy said, that some of these sub-cabinet appointments, the head of EBSA, for example, could take months. In fact, we didn't have a head of EBSA in the Trump administration for a whole year, and it's usually many months. So I think it's going to take some time, as Andy said. Meanwhile, we probably will see some guidance, but not some of the big policy issues that administration works on. They need time to kind of put that stuff together and decide where they're going to go.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. I think looking forward over 2021, when it comes to retirement plans, we can look forward to continued change in the regulatory and legislative arena after a long dry spell on that front. Following the passage of the Pension Protection Act of 06, we've seen a number of changes already, and I think we'll continue to do so in 2021. So thanks again, everyone, and stay safe.
This material reflects the analysis and opinions of the speakers as of January 13, 2021, and may differ from the opinions of other portfolio managers, investment teams, or platforms at Franklin Templeton. The views expressed are those of the speakers, and the comments, opinions, and analyses are rendered as of the date of this podcast and may change without notice. The information provided in this material is not intended as a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any country, region, market, industry, security, or strategy. Statements of fact are from sources considered reliable, but no representation or warranty is made as to their completeness or accuracy. This communication is general in nature and provided for educational and informational purposes only. It should not be considered or relied upon as legal, tax, or investment advice, or an investment recommendation, or as a substitute for legal or tax counsel. Any investment products or services named herein are for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered an offer to buy or sell or an investment recommendation for any specific security, strategy, or investment product or service. Always consult a qualified professional or your own independent financial professional for personalized advice or investment recommendations tailored to your specific goals, individual situation, and risk tolerance. Franklin Templeton, FT, does not provide legal or tax advice. Federal and state laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact your results. FT cannot guarantee that such information is accurate, complete, or timely, and disclaims any liability arising out of your use of or any tax position taken in reliance on such information. All financial decisions and investments involve risk, including possible loss of principal. Data from third-party sources may have been used in the preparation of this material, and FT has not independently verified, validated, or audited such data. FT accepts no liability whatsoever for any loss arising from use of this information, and reliance upon the comments, opinions, and analyses in the material is at the sole discretion of the user. Products, services, and information may not be available in all jurisdictions and are offered outside the U.S. by other FT affiliates and/or their distributors, as local laws and regulation permits. Please consult your own financial professional for further information on availability of products and services in your jurisdiction. Issued in the U.S. by Franklin Templeton Distributors, Inc., the principal distributor of Franklin Templeton's U.S. registered products, which are available only in jurisdictions where an offer or solicitation of such products is permitted under applicable laws and regulation. Issued by Franklin Templeton outside of the U.S. Please visit www.franklinresources.com to be directed to your local Franklin Templeton website. Copyright 2021, Franklin Templeton, all rights reserved.